What's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to six guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
Hello, Voices of Wrestling listener, Dave Ryan here. Have you ever wondered to yourself, how many hidden gems are hidden away inside the last years of World Championship Wrestling? Have you ever asked yourself how many tenuous gags can be made about the name Mike Enos? And have you ever thought about what it sounds like for two Irishmen to interpret a very chaotic company through its B-show? The answers to all this and more are just a click away. Check out Days of Thunder every second Thursday on the Voices of Wrestling podcast network.
Do you like wrestling trivia? Then check out the 5-Star Match Game, the Pro Wrestling Quiz Show. I'm Joe Gagne, and every episode, I grill three contestants with 5 rounds of power-packed wrestling trivia. We have over 30 evergreen episodes in the archives covering WWE, AEW, Japan, Mexico, and much, 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 much more. Play along at home and check it out today.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
To the highway, in a brand new day, over the rainbow, gotta let it go.
So far, the
rain is a gun.
Welcome back to Open the Voice Gate for December 17th, 2025. We are members of the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. You can find us on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network feed or on our own dedicated Open the Voice Gate feed, wherever you get your podcasts. You can find us on social media at Open the Voice Gate. And if you'd like to donate to the show, click the link in the show notes. It'll take you to our redcircle.com landing site. It's where you click the red box to sponsor this podcast. It's about one time. Or reoccurring donation, no obligation whatsoever, but we would like to thank all of our previous sponsors. I'm one of your hosts, it's your old pal, Mike Spears, joined alongside returning host, Case Lowe. And Case, it's been a couple of weeks, and it's something where we have talked outside of the Dragon Gate kind of realm more recently, but it's December, we are at the end of this year, and I just want to check up and see how you're doing before the holidays are upon us.
Somebody sent me a DM yesterday, and it was
them saying, hey, I want to get this in while I'm thinking of it. Here's my Alti Awards 2025 ballot. And my first reaction was, God, that's a weird thing to send me. And then I realized that we're in the middle of December and that all of the main canon Drangate stuff is largely over at this point. And so it's actually a perfectly normal thing to send me. And that really threw me for a loop.
You know, I looked at the calendar and I was like, oh, wait, I always like to think about like a time period where we would have basically final gate and then the end of whatever that calendar year was. But then it would be about 2 or 3 weeks into January before either stuff went on the network or before that footage made its way out there. And it felt like that we would have like a holiday break. But we're going to get the ultis together pretty soon. Maybe that might be something that we look into 2026 and one of our first few shows of the year and take care of that then.
I can't fathom planning something beyond Christmas right now, because I know on Monday we're going to record an episode of Those Days, so you'll have one more of those to listen to during the week of Christmas, and if you don't get to it then in the week of New Year's. But yeah, I can't even process that right now. But I do know that it is crazy to think that we're at the end of the year and that, you know, by and large we're done with all the Dragon Gate stuff, because there's no final gate this year, which is nice. I don't have to worry about taking podcast equipment home or waking up at 2 a.m. on Christmas Day to watch a cold show from a Fukuoka building that is famously very cold, or anything like that.
Hopping on a call with me trying to find a spare room in my parents' old house on December 25th, because we say that, oh, there's no way Kai is going to win the Dreamgate title. No, yeah, I don't miss that.
You know, yeah. It's like the house that my parents live in now, which is the house that a good chunk of the Dragon Gate USA, at least the first quarter of the Dragon Gate USA episodes that we did 5 years ago were taped in. Like it's a house where sound really travels. There's no quiet part of that house. Just for whatever reason, you can just hear everything all the time everywhere. And so doing makeshift soundproof on Christmas break was something that I had just sort of gotten used to. And I mean, when I was home during the pandemic, like that bedroom that I was in had two doors and one of them just permanently had a comforter like taped to the wall to try to soundproof it the best that I could. I was living in like a weird, like crack addict soundproof room with the way that it looked. It was a very strange setup that I had, but I don't have to do that this year. So I think it's a nice thing now, but I think come 23rd, 24th, 25th, 26th, I'm going to go, God, I kind of wish we had a final gate to talk about, but we're not going to have that this year. And I don't know if we'll ever have that again.
Yeah, it seems at least that Fukuoka dates now uno, dos, tres at the end of February. Nothing announced for December. Nothing announced for January for Yokohama as well. So it seems like Bayside is at the very least like taking the time off. And at least for me, there still is the Kobe fan appreciation show on the 27th. And I always, it was always something that back in the old dark ages, I would quickly log on over Christmas breaks onto iHeartGG and hear about these like really fun hometown shows that now we get to see at the end of the year. And there's no finality. There's no like big spectacle comparison to a Final Gate show, but at least we still have one more like kind of named Dragon Gate show before the end of this year. At the same time, we're recording this on the 17th. We took the day for the Cork, and it does kind of feel like we have like finality on the calendar year coming out of last night's show.
Well, yes, that's the sort of strange thing that you've given me a segue. There's plenty of other stuff. I want to talk about Pro Wrestling Noah at some point in this podcast. I want to talk about the MVP interview I did at some point in this podcast, but you've given me an in. So we're going to dive into this Dragon Gate stuff right now, which is that my big picture take is that I am absolutely perplexed on how to feel about Madoka Kakuta as Open the Dream Gate champion. I think in a vacuum, he is doing a very good job. I loved the Ben K match. I thought the Susumu match was spectacular. I thought he and Valletta did the best work that they could have in that Dreamgate match. I mean, miles and miles and miles better than the Monte match that Valletta had last year. And Jay even referenced that on commentary where, you know, he was saying last year when he had a Dreamgate match, he tried to work a quote big match and he doesn't think he's going to be doing that this time around. He's going to work a more Gianni Valletta style. Kakuta's approach to wrestling, I think, lends itself far more to a Valletta singles match than Monte's anyways, but they
agreed.
They stuck the landing there. I thought it was a very good, not great, but a very good Dreamgate match that I was entertained with mostly from start to finish. And certainly during the second half of the match was really, really into at points. All of that is to say, like, on paper, I think Kakuta has been a very good champion. I think Gaja Dokuro as a unit, you know, there's so much to like with Ishin. I just did my first two drafts of SFM 50, an initial 50 that took me a long time to put together. And then I looked at that and went, oh, I forgot four guys. That's going to make everything way more difficult. But through the second draft, you know, I mean, I think Ishin is a top 15 wrestler in the world. I think Kakuta's a top 50 guy in the world. I flirted with the idea of putting Kato on the back of the list, but I think there's just a little bit too much depth in that 35 to 50 group this year. Kai has been Kai. That's, you know, that's a compliment. I think he's been really solid. I think Gaja Dokuro as a unit is working, but why doesn't Madoka Kakuta feel like a hotter champion right now?
I think that it's a little bit of the heel champion at the forefront kind of figure that, I mean, there were times like in 2015 of Shingo Takagi that that like the reactions did not always match up with like how critically acclaimed that run was, like especially if you think about like how Kakuta is kind of portraying himself. I feel like there's some similarities there, and maybe the overall tenor of the promotion has cooled off to kind of an extent that where it worked much more for Shingo, maybe it's not necessarily transplanted as much with Kakuta. I came away from the match and like my thoughts of Kakuta a little bit stronger than you. I really liked this match. I thought this was Johnny Valletta's best singles match in Dragon Gate, and they worked a style that felt different, and it also felt like this is the kind of way that Johnny Valletta should have been in every Dreamgate match with. And I think that that provided a contrast with Kakuta also as the bruising heavyweight, and that kind of style is such a contrast from what you kind of are conditioned for in the Dreamgate, especially when you think about like Shun and Yamato before him. So I think there's a couple things where it feels like that in our minds we're like, oh no, Kakuta's doing the right things. It's feeling like you want to do, like you had a very quick built Battle of the Titans that I felt like was very deserved. And you're still kind of in a way that the company does not necessarily feel like it's breaking out of that doldrum that it's kind of inhabited for the last 18 months.
I think one of the things that I'm struggling with here is Yamato's long reign and Shun's short reign. Those guys really did feel like top of the line main eventers, and it felt like you were watching some of the best wrestlers in the world. And I think right now, with the way that Shun is positioned as not a main eventer at this exact moment in time, the way Yamato has been cycled down in the better part of the second half of the year, the way that Ben K right now has been cycled down, you have a promotion that feels like it's made up of a ton of upper mid-carders, and the main eventers that are there are not in the main event. And Kakuta, I don't really think has shown me the commanding presence that I was hoping for. And that's the confusing thing, is I can look on paper and go, well, I've really liked all of his matches with the exception of the title win against Shun, and he wasn't the problem in that match. I thought it was in his 9-year career, the single biggest swing and miss that Shun's ever had, and really one of the only swing and misses that he's ever had. But maybe this is a me problem where I'm just not, I don't want to say living and breathing, because I'm obviously here, I'm up on the promotion as much as anybody is, but maybe it's just a me thing where right now we are ships passing in the night and I'm not able to latch on to Kakuta's work as much as I would like. But it's not clicking for me in the way that I was hoping for, if that makes sense. I was hoping to come out of this show feeling much more confident about him as a heel challenger, and I haven't seen the attendance number for this show, But
1190, and I only have that from the Gayora site. Other sources don't have it listed, so that's a self-reported 1190.
Okay, so 1190, and we're going to go into January with Kakuta versus Cielo, and I'm not confident that will do 1100 people. So, you know, the problem that I'm looking at in Dragon right now is the plateau's getting lower. You know, they've just gone down a rung. Mm-hmm. And now this is where they're at, where it's not 1,200, 1,300, it's 1,000, 1,100. And I don't like that. And that's now happening on Kakuta's watch, and I think that's something to be aware of. But also, when you go throughout the roster, other than a lengthy Shun reign or a babyface Ishin turn, which I don't think is going to happen anytime soon, there's not a lot of guys where I go, well, let me scratch my chin and think about them as Open the Dreamgate champion for a while. Again, right now it's a roster of guys wrestling like upper mid-carders and not main eventers, and that's a little frustrating for me.
And I think that part of that scenario is created by the fact that there's no question that Madoka Kakuta, at least station-wise, he defeated Shun Skywalker in such a dominant fashion that there's no, like, real recourse to revisit it unless Shun something like it changes with that. And then Yamato was so thoroughly dispatched by Shun, who was thoroughly dispatched by Kakuta, that it just in very short order you have a guy who kind of stands alone. And then with the way that he had the matches with Susumu and Benkei, in some ways, they kind of booked this kind of clearance of the main event. And while doing that, you're notably holding your Yuki Oshioka ace up your sleeve. And I don't know if at this point, I feel like as a Yoshioka general kind of defender, and with the evidence that we have from like that run that he had in 2022 and 2023, where he was drawing better numbers than this. And there's a part of me that goes like, why are we fooling around with Cielo at this point? Let's go with the guy who has deliverables, and you have a banked kind of title shot there. But it also kind of feels like that maybe Cielo, given the fact there is no Yokohama, that there will be a Wakayama before Fukuoka and Inoue's Dos Tres, you're kind of saving that match for that building in a way. And if that's the case here, Cielo, with the way that he's kind of been protected, it feels like that you've just built this guy up to essentially just get obliterated next month because we're biding time before the actual valid title shot is going to happen.
It's interesting that they're going from Valletta to Cielo. It makes me wonder if they're going back to Shun for Uno Dos Tres instead of Yoshioka. There's a million thoughts here that I want to parse through. I guess let me speak on the Cielo front of it, which is that I think Dragon Gate with the Gianni Valletta stuff, while it didn't perform at the box office in the way that I was necessarily hoping for it to, because I was so into the story, and that is definitely something that should be noted, is how down the King of Gate finals were, with Valletta being, you know, an obvious finals favorite, and then this show doing what it did. You know, I do think that's something where we have to acknowledge that while I might enjoy the hell out of this story, and I think they've done a marvelous job, and I think to some degree they deserve a back pat for being so bold with their booking, it's not something that connected with the masses in the way that they were hoping for. This Cielo booking, I don't know what they're thinking. I mean, I think it's a bold move, and I'm all for it, but I mean, half of what we know about this guy is fan lore. You know, I couldn't believe this was the direction they were going. I think he's one of the most underqualified Dreamgate champion challengers in history. I think they better load up that show with a strong semi-main event, because I do not trust that El Cielo versus Madoka Kakuta can get people in any building.
Yeah, and I feel like you've put yourself in the position with Cielo where, for those who have not watched this Korakuen, so as soon as Kakuta retains, he cuts a promo basically saying like, hey, Valletta proved that he actually had what was a test, but I'm still the strongest. Who is ever going to stop me? And then El Cielo hit the ring, held a microphone up to his face, and then Shun Skywalker talked for him. And through all of this, Ishan coming out, being flabbergasted that they're about to validate a Dreamgate shot for someone who is basically being played as a marionette, but it is now the next Dreamgate match. And this is after CLO wiped out D-Courage in 5 minutes. And you look at what CLO has done since debuting slash returning, according to how you want to read into it. He's not had more than like 7 minutes in a match since returning. Or he has been in Atomicos and Trios matches where he only has to do certain things. So this is, if you ask me about like, oh, the qualifications of a Dreamgate shot, like maybe I need to rewind things back to 2021 and think about Kakuta's Dreamgate shot against Shun at that time. And it still kind of felt like, in a way, that Hip Hop Kakuta was more positioned for that Dreamgate shot at that show than CLO is coming up in January.
We thought that the Kakuta thing was crazy, and I feel like he was far more established than anything that CLO's had going on. I mean, CLO's an undercard bid player. Now, that's not to say that he's not great. I think he's great, and I thought the D-Courage Shun CLO tag, for what it was spectacular. And now, with the benefit of hindsight of knowing what was to come at the end of this show, it was effective, but it's still like, I don't know what we're doing with this one. This feels like a dangerous, dangerous game to play. And I'm trying to pull up if we did a preview for Dead or Alive 2021, just to read
it. It was 2021, right?
It was. I don't know.
Cool. Just going off the top of my head. It's been a long time.
I don't know if we did a preview for it. I obviously know I did a review, but I'm not seeing a
at that time. It would have been me doing a written one with maybe you joining in, or us doing a preview podcast.
Yeah, I'm not seeing a preview. Let me go to my review real quick and just see what I said. This was already a history-making Dreamgate bound, as it was the youngest Dreamgate match on record, with these men forming a combined age of 45, but will now go down as the shortest Dreamgate match ever. Watching it live, it was uncomfortable, so that's just more about the match. Yeah, I don't have anything about where we were at with Kakuta on this point, but if my memory serves me correct, I mean, and also that was, you know, the semi-main event of a Dead or Alive cage match show, with SB Kento in the main event in his hometown and Dragon Kid in the main event in his hometown, so it didn't need...
It was a very safe title match for him to have his first one.
I feel like if they would have done Skywalker versus Kakuta at the May 2021 Korakuen show headlining, I would have felt much more confident in that, drawing a strong pandemic number in relation to what Kakuta versus Cielo is going to do. I just don't know if you're a new Dragon Gate fan, or if you're somebody that follows this promotion, but maybe you're not wrapped up in this Takuma, Nishikawa, Tien Revolution lore that has been following specifically our Discord for years now, and rightfully, I'm a part of it. I mean, rightfully so. I'm fascinated by the guy's entire story.
I mean, there's been absolutely no shred of evidence to dissuade anyone to not believe that this is who it is so
far.
Yes,
everybody should continue along those lines. I get it. It's the guy, you know? It's a fascinating story, but there's nothing that's been presented on camera other than this is Shun Skywalker's friend, and he did sort of eat Daya and Yoshioka's lunch in Korakuen, that would suggest that this is somebody that people should care about. You know, if we were going to go through, in the same way that, you know, TW has those roster rankings, right? I mentioned upper mid-carders earlier, but if it was, you know, main event, upper mid-carder, mid-carder, lower mid-carder, I don't know if I'd rank him as a mid-carder in this promotion right now. He strikes me as a lower mid-card guy who would be the third most important guy on any Triangle Gate team that he's on right now. And they're going with him here, and I don't feel like Kakuta feels hot enough or mean enough or is charismatic enough to lead something like that. And as you see with Cielo, they're leaning on his partnership with Shun Skywalker. I wouldn't say that name for 9 years. Shun Skywalker far more than they are anything that Cielo is bringing to the table. I was just stunned by this, where I was already coming out of Valletta versus Kakuta going, okay, I recognize that Kakuta's doing good work, but there's something about it that is just not screaming world champion to me. And we're coming out of a time where Yamada was the best champion in wrestling. it's a sharp contrast. Even though Kikuchi's doing good work, it's just a sharp contrast that I'm a little uncomfortable with. And now you have a completely unproven wrestler, let alone challenger, in the main event.
Sure.
I could see that January Corkin number being a disaster.
Yeah, and while you were talking, I was doing a little bit of research and like looking into it. And at least like this is just like what I've been doing it in like those couple minutes. You know, it's the number one thing you see when you search for El Cielo in katakana and in Japanese. There's one that a native fan that I'm just going to translate. That I'm just going to read the translation from. I'm so nervous and scared that LCL's true identity might be revealed in the next Dreamgate Championship match. That's the most that you're kind of seeing about that. And more people still reacting to the newness of him. So it does kind of make you see, like, I thought that when they had Gianni cut that promo after he won King of Gate and like that build and the way that Corkin seemed kind of into it, I thought that that would break the 1200 barrier, and that didn't. I don't know Shun's marionette act necessarily being the thing that brings more people into a show that case. Historically, Dragon Gate's January Corkin numbers are historically, if you plot them across the year, they're always the lowest because they're always the last person, that the last company to run this building every year because of everything being run to death around New Year's and Itaeon.
I'm just very curious about this. I think they're setting themselves up for failure here. And it's not even that I don't think Cielo will bomb in this scenario. I think the guy's looked awesome in everything that he's done. I liked his King of Gate match more than you did, but there's nothing that he's done on camera that's going to make people care about him. And giving the ammunition to Shun Skywalker is only going to hurt Cielo in the long run, because to go back to my point, you know, I do think we're in a dangerous holding pattern where Shun comes across as an A+, Yamato comes across as an A+, but they're not being used in that position right now. And the rest of these guys, it's a lot of upper mid carders, and there's a story being told with Yoshioka, but he's not a safe bet to get back there. You can always get Ben back there, but you got to work to get him back there. I don't think
he get Ben back this run. I think that that was kind of the sort of title defense that afterwards it's like, okay, we'll see you whenever the next champion comes along.
Oh no, yeah, I mean they won't come back to him with the Kakuta reign, and nor should they. I think he's got another prolonged Dreamgate run in him. I would like to see that, but it's not happening anytime. You know, he's not going to be the next champion, so it's going to be a while before they can circle back to him. And I will always go back to, you know, I think you have to have a huge asterisk mark with Tanaka. We're going to see what happens with D-Courage. Again, I want to talk about the D-Courage stuff here. You have a huge asterisk with Ishin. And I think when they turn him and he goes back to Ishin Ihashi and he embraces his family's name once again, I think he has all the potential in the world. And I think with Mochizuki Jr., you know, if they ever want to get serious with him, and it's not that they're running out of time. I mean, the guy's younger than I am, but if they find themselves in a position where they want to get serious with him, you know, I think Tanaka and Junior and Ishin are the three guys that I believe in the most, with Homari Notch just slightly below them. It's not that I'm worried about the future of this company. They have all of the talent in the world. They have a ton of depth. What is lacking right now is the same issue that is facing all of Japan and most of wrestling, you know, outside of the top dogs in CMLL. As you look around and you go, Who are the guys? You know, this is not a problem unique to Dragon Gate, but I do think Dragon Gate is uniquely suffering from it right now.
Yeah, and I think that this becomes another kind of facet of the overall situation of the promotion since 2022. You know, this goes just in line, and I think needs to kind of be viewed a little bit in concert with whatever optics from the departures, with just the damage of 3 years of reduced capacity and what it does to an independently run promotion. Like, this is just another aspect of it. And when you look across the remainder of Japan, case we want to jump around for a second, I think that when you're talking about like who's creating stars and where the stars are, it kind of, that entire discussion can almost be couched in this year's Tokyo Sports Awards that were just released.
Well, let's quickly go there before we go back to Corkin.
Yeah, so it was announced yesterday that Saya Kamatani, for the first time in the history of the Tokyo Sports Awards, is the first woman to win the overall Japanese MVP award, winning an overwhelming margin. And as you go up and down the overall award ballot more and more, and as the years go by, if from a Dragon Gate eyes, you instantly kind of go to best newcomer, as that's where you think where the Dragon Gate participation would be. And instead, the newcomer of the year is Kaisei Takechi of DDT. And looking kind of up and down the list, it really kind of lends to the fact that the only like true kind of stars and actual draws that you see in this scene right now are coming from Stardom, or they are other wrestlers who find a way to kind of break out the same way that Ozawa does. And then you also get situations on this award that I think are kind of interesting. No All Japan, and I think that's where Suri kind of got to benefit from All Japan being maybe the one major promotion in Japan right now with a maybe worse optical look than maybe some parts of the Dragon system. But it's an interesting awards situation this year, Case, where I feel like the one thing that we need to have a discussion about is Rookie of the Year. Let me pull up the votes for us. So the overall votes for it, only one ballot, the winner, Kaisei Takechi, and then afterwards tied for second place, Victoria Zuki, Yuzuki, a Marigold, Daiki Odashima from Noah, Daiki Nagai from New Japan gets two votes, and the one person from Dragon Gate who got a vote in the category is Jiro Shimbashi. So no Homare whatsoever in this category.
Before I dive into this, and this is my fault because I didn't look this up before, do we know, did Homare get votes last year? I forget how this works.
This is the one that I think is open for like 3 years. So I don't remember if he did exactly. Let me see if I could pull up 2024 Tokyo Sports Awards Best Newcomer. See if we have
too many awards on this Wikipedia page. The way they laid this out is insane.
Yeah, newcomer of the year last year was Bolton Oleg. I don't see the I'm trying to see if I can find the vote count for the newcomer. So it was Bolton Oleg last year.
Well, let me tell you, a bad pick if Homare was in the running. But I said it earlier today on Twitter. I mean, these awards are what they are. If you're not gonna have SB Kento win in 2021, yeah. Say again?
Oh no, I was agreeing with you. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, that went to Yuki Arai of Tokyo Joshi Pro. If you're not going to have SB Kento win in 2021, then I can't really put energy into any of this. When you're not giving the Dragon Gate guy, whoever that may be, the best technique award just on a token thank you, you know, when it goes to Okan in 2021, Lindemann 2022, Aoyagi 23, Shinya Aoki won it last year, and then Tanahashi won it this year, which, all right, fine, I'm not going to get too upset about the Tanahashi thing, but when you
get... going to get an award this year.
Yeah, but then you start, you know, you just start thinking about this and just how ridiculous it is that Dragon Gate continues to get shut out of this, and I don't know if I'm going to have time to write the article. I guess maybe I'll try to do another Dragon Gate 101 this year. I've been doing that the last 2 years. In 2023, it was largely to set the record straight on Nozawa Gate and everything that was happening there. 2024, I was like, hey, this promotion is way better than people are giving it credit for. I'm going to try to do a year-end Dragon Gate article for voicesofwrestling.com, and I guess I can fold some of the Homare stuff in there, but
mm-hmm.
I say it with my chest. I feel very confident about it, and I feel like I'm qualified to say it because I've done the homework on Akiyama, and I witnessed Matt Riddle's rookie year in real time. From September to September, I've never seen a better rookie year than what Homare had. And the crazy thing is, it's not just Tokyo Sports shutting him out, which is one thing, but I think a lot of people, if I say that, I don't even think they know what I'm talking about. It's not that they disagree, it's that they have no knowledge of this guy who's 21 years old, who was immediately integrated into the touring roster, was immediately on every show, started winning titles, started having high-level matches. You know, the Rey de Pareja stuff this year, I mean, he was unbelievable. And
the King of Kobe Sambo Hall.
it was a really special night. I mean, that's one of those things, you know, just as time goes on, and I always talk about the overconsumption of footage, and we have too much, and we don't have memories anymore in the way that we used to. You know, I can remember every Dragon Gate Cork and Hall main event from probably 2014 through the pandemic. But if you ask me what main evented Cork and Hall 6 months ago, I have no fucking idea. But the Hamare thing on March 30th, because I remember the date, that's one of those special things that I'll remember forever. That's a very special night in Dragon Gate history. And I think for most promotions, if they had a rookie that even did that, that would be good enough to cement them, at least in the conversation for Rookie of the Year. That's not a blip on the radar, but just one of the many great things that Hamare did throughout 2025. And it's not a conversation in the Voices of Wrestling bubble. It's not a conversation on the Observer Forum. It's not a conversation with Tokyo Sports. And that, more than, hey, I think Rita's one of the 20 best wrestlers in the world. Hey, I think Ishin's one of the 15 best wrestlers in the world. Hey, I think Kami's one of the 10 best wrestlers in the world. The Hamare thing is the thing that has made me feel most crazy this year, where I just look at him and the work that he's done as a rookie. And I've always said, you know, the highest compliment I can give him is that he's so good that you forget he's a rookie. He's not good for being 6 months in. He's just a great wrestler, period. No, it's the ESPN cliche. Like, I should be above this, what I'm about to say, but no one's talking about it, and I don't understand why.
Yeah, and the issue I had this year, I think Kaisei Takechi was destined to win that award. He is, it's just for like the sheer fact that he is what he is coming from. I mean, you brought up Yuki Arai versus SB Kento. That was another case of someone who was a massive celebrity in another field entering pro wrestling and then being able to bring those fans in and over it. The second that Kaisei Takechi drew the second number he got in DDT, showing that the Rampage fans would continue to support him, pretty much destined with it. But yeah, Hamare was the best candidate that Dragon Gate's had since SB Kento. And at least when you look at what the company can do outside of El Cielo essentially winning the belt in January, there's been no one who has been treated as carefully and at the same time have been thrown into the deep end in the way that he has than Hamare. And I guess like the thing that kind of gets me about the awards and the overall kind of discourse is it all goes back to the people who usually complain the most about how bad wrestling is these days, or the people that would probably like Dragon Gate the most, but they are either too set in their ways, or that we are in content overload, and then that completely destroys it. But it's tough because I kind of look at it in the way that Hamare was completely deserving and rightfully should have this award, with the reality of the second that Kaisei Takechi again drew that second number for DDT, this award was completely wrapped up. I mean, the fact that New Japan is going to try to find a way to cram his never six-man appearance into that 100-minute a broadcast window pretty much tells you essentially what that award is and why he got that award. Basically, it's eyeballs.
Hey, what's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays, decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa, got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments, Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels, Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
Yeah, again, I get it. I'm long past the point. After the SB Kento thing, I only have so much energy for Tokyo Sports, but the Hamare thing is just on a larger level. You know, he's not going to do well in the Observer Awards. I think if I was even in the Voices of Wrestling Slack, but you know, let's say in the awards channel in the Voices of Wrestling Discord, I think people would look at me like I'm out of my mind if I said that he had a better rookie year than Jun Akiyama or Matt Riddle. And I feel very, very strongly that he did. I don't know where else to go from here.
No, I'm with you on that. Did you have any other Tokyo Sports awards kind of takes before we got back there? Shun Skywalker got, I don't know if it was technique category, but I know that he was one of the candidates that didn't make a final ballot, won the categories.
Good for Jiro. Good for Jiro Shimbashi. That's my take.
I feel like that's kind of the thing that has adapted over the last 2 months. Like the one thing that if you fell asleep on Halloween and you woke up today and we had to catch you up on what's happened in Dragon Gate over the last 60 or I guess technically that would be 47 days or give or take one, would be like, so you need to know about Jiro Shimbashi at this point, because yeah, like good for him. The act has more legs than I ever thought it would. And it's just great so far.
Yeah, won me over. The Ultimo match, I know we're bouncing around here, but the Ultimo match at Korakuen is the one where I was like, all right, he got me. This is great. And I don't need any more or any less. Give me the Korakuen spotlight. I'm going to be far more entertained by him in Korakuen than I am on a dry Kyoto show or a dry Hokkaido show. This is a Korakuen Hall act. Give me it in Korakuen. I'm going to be entertained every time. He really got me in the Ultimo match.
Yeah, no, that was a lot of fun. Congratulations, and also best wishes to our most recent Open the Ware Gate champion, Ultimo Dragon. He vacated it, I think, technically within 45 seconds. That was his first ever Dragon System title, ever.
Yeah, well, let's keep it that way. I mean, that's fine, you know? There's nothing where I don't look at the lay of the land and go, well, maybe a Triangle Gate championship. No, is fine. It's fine. He had a lot of belts at one point. He doesn't need any more. We're doing okay with Ultimo Dragon. I will say that was as entertained from start to finish as I've been by an Ware Gate match in God knows how long. You know, it's going to take me a few days to get through this written review. My goal is to have it up by Monday of next week, but it's the one time where I'm going to have a multiple paragraph Ware Gate review. I was thoroughly Ultimo telling people not to clap. Ultimo then getting the insane ovation when they called his name, him winning, then him vacating the title. I was so thoroughly entertained by all of it.
And you have to know, Saireo knew what would happen the second that he booked this match. Like, as soon as this happened, he's like, oh yeah, no, we're going to prank Ultimo Dragon and make him go through this shit. And this is going to be the only title that he's ever going to hold in this company. Like, it was just a tremendous roast on Ultimo, of all things.
Yes, no, the whole thing was great. The presentation of it was absolutely phenomenal. You know, for Ultimo to come out as X and for that to be a nice little pop, and then the powerbomb spot with the cell phone is a Stalker Ichikawa level comedy spot. And I think I was a little bit of a curmudgeon when Jiro debuted because I'm just going to be, that's just how it is. But I have now really come around on this act as, all right, this is the closest thing we have to Stalker right now. And this should be embraced more than I've been embracing it.
And he's shown some creativity doing different kinds of phone spots, doing different things with the briefcase and the lunchbox. Like, there's legs to this. Like, I think that as long as they want to kind of have him do this, and you should go with it. I mean, he should be a Tokyo act, and then whenever at a certain point where there's other comedy acts, you can go send him to other promotions to go do the act here, and he kind of be like a traveling Dragon Gate kind of thing. And it definitely has legs to it. Getting back to actual meat of this Korakuen, we talked about the we've talked about two of the three title matches.
Let's talk about the Dreamgate match itself. We haven't really talked about the in-ring of it, and I would like to.
Yeah, I appreciate the fact that Johnny Valetta immediately made this into a Johnny Valetta just chaotic brawl for the first few minutes, and him always beating the 20 count because Johnny wants to win the belt and he knows that he can do so. And I thought that did such, like, it was such a different kind of open that I really enjoy that. And then the the pace difference that you got because of them just kind of going at it as two heavyweights colliding against each other before we got into the closing stretch. And the way that they did, like, the King Kong knee drop off the apron for another close count out, and then just like the way that there was the diving hip bomber they caught into a choke slam, that had me jump out of my seat because it looked like that could have been it. And that's all I really require in matches like that. And I was 4 flat on it, Case. I thought that this is easily the best Johnny Valletta singles match in the promotion. And that's including how much I enjoyed the semifinal of King of Gate that he had against Arita.
I think I preferred, actually, I know I preferred. I preferred the finals of King of Gate just a little bit more than this one. I'm with you in the sense that I'm so glad they started the match the way that they did. I thought that was really smart. And even as we drift further and further away from a Dreamgate presentation that I would prefer with the anthem and with a certain level of pageantry that just for whatever reason seems to be drifting away from Japanese wrestling at a time in which I think they need to embrace that sort of stuff, I liked all of that. The bummer is that there's the hot start, there's this great finishing stretch, and there was sort of this middle portion, and the middle portion is where they did limb work and were working it more just like a traditional match. I didn't need that. I think you could have cut 3 or 4 minutes out of this match and had it worked more like a G1 spread, and I think that would have done them some favors. I also think they missed the peak of this match by just a little bit. I thought it went on a little bit too long at the end, even if I liked a lot of the work they were doing. But a very, very impressive match. You know, I thought the double crossbody spot looked great in the middle of the ring. I loved the Iron Claw choke slam on the apron and then the King Kong knee drop off of the apron that led to the 19 countout tees for Kakuta. I thought Kakuta took a lot of gnarly bumps in this match. He took an Iron Claw choke slam in the ring where a ring looked like it had no give whatsoever.
Jay and Mo were openly worried about the ring during the final minutes of the match.
Yes, no, and I understand why, because it did not look like it was going to support their weight for much longer. So they did a great job. I mean, I would go 3.75 on this, where I was 4 stars flat for the Valletta Ishin match a few weeks ago. It's interesting now where you've got Hamari out for an undisclosed period of time. They're clearly trying to do something with Cielo. I would think Valletta goes away. At least I would hope Valletta goes away. I think the charm of him is that he builds up to a match on every tour, has that match, leaves. This is clearly the, okay, we need to get him home. We need to get him to Malta and rest him for a little bit. But now you're at a point where Cypatra is going to be down to 2 guys. And that just also factors into this weirdness of the Cielo thing again. So there's a lot of moving parts happening because of this match. As for the match itself, again, I thought Valletta redeemed himself from last year's Monte match. I thought Kakuta was very good in it. And overall, it's a match worth watching.
Yeah, and I think just for like how distinctly different of a Dreamgate match, it is worth watching. I think I talk to people who don't get in and out on Dragon Gate or have fallen off for a couple of years. I was like, guys, you have to understand Johnny Valletta is awesome, and Dragon Gate's booking him like it's 1983, and he's having a world title match that they've built up. I know you didn't watch Hokkaido, but like the pull apart and the brawl that they had as a part of the buildup, like, had me on my feet. Johnny Valletta beating him with the flying crossbody, just like this.
To be clear, I watched it. I really enjoyed it. I don't have thoughts on Hokkaido because those shows existed. Fair. But no, I thought that was really strong.
But like, it's one of those things that like I want to take this match, and if we go back to like the mixtape days, this is a match that I would hold in my back pocket if like Secret Santa ever was revived at Voices of Wrestling, because it's such a cool and different style of Dreamgate match that I thought they completely pulled off in nearly every way. I do agree that you could have just cut out part of the middle section. It's had to be all full car crash, and maybe that would have had me at 4.25, if not higher.
Good on Valletta. You know, I wrote the article and I haven't had a chance to come on here. But thank you to everybody who read the Gianni Valletta article on voicesofwrestling.com. You can obviously still do that if you haven't yet. That just goes through how he got to Dragon Gate, the initial perception of him in Dragon Gate when he started to change people's minds, and then this most recent run that he's been on, it's loaded with links to matches you can watch if you're a Dragon Gate Network subscriber. So if you're somebody that is woefully behind or looking to get into Dragon Gate, it's a perfect article for you to read, because I kind of take your hand through, here's everything you should watch. If you see a blue link, it's going to be something that you should check out. So thank you to everybody who read that. I had a lot of fun writing that and a lot of fun going back to the very beginning of Valletta and Dragon Gate, which was now 2 years ago. And just as I had suspected, and as I've said on this show, even without going back, but really sitting down and doing the work for a minute, it's like, you know, they've really done a marvelous job with this guy to take him from a one-dimensional cosplay act into, at first, a sideshow Dreamgate challenger where we really weren't sure what the match with Monte was going to look like. And even when that didn't go great, they set him up to win by building up the Rita program on his way out of that first tour. The Rita program leads to his third tour this year, where he has the Mochizuki match, which on a personal level is one of my favorite matches of the year. And then for him to come back, turn face, and then close it out with his Dreamgate challenge again against Kakuta. And they've done a marvelous job. I mean, I have enjoyed this run, this character, this act so much. I hope he goes away for a little bit. I do not need more of him now, but I will welcome him back with open arms when the time comes.
Yep, absolutely. And hopefully when they come back, they have another great plan for him, because they've shown that the brain trust in Dragon Gate certainly gets how to make this act work and be vibrant in the modern day.
Well, if they can do it, it's him and Hamare and Rey de Parejas and Skywalker and Cielo and Rey de Parejas. And I could see those teams going to the finals. I think that would be fascinating. But you've got something with him and Hamare if Hamare can come back in time.
Yep. Nope. That's true. The semi-main event of Korakuen was the Open the Twin Gate titles. The first defense for Jackie Kamei and Rita going up against Luis Monte and Demus, coming in both Monte with the Demus face paint and horns, this being built up earlier in this month. And Case, it's another great match with Jackie Kamei and Rita going up against Luis Monte. Big shock there. The Jackie Rita retain with the Retanic on Demus to get their first defense. And it's that's the one thing on Tokyo Sports that really kind of shocked me, was the fact that there was not even a single vote for Jackie Rita among their electorate for Tag Team of the Year.
No, and I don't think they're going to get any fucking votes in the Observer Awards either, which is going to bug me, because for as great as the Bucks have been this year, I've really enjoyed the Bucks. The Bucks, as we're speaking, are having a great match on Dynamite right now.
Yeah, I was going to somehow try to find a way for me to go, Case, tweet the article during this show.
It kills me that the Bucks haven't worked Arena Mexico, or at least CMLL proper yet, because Nick Jackson and Hechicero are born to wrestle each other. Nick Jackson is legitimately one of the most talented wrestlers to ever live. And Matt's not far behind him, but it's just a weird, you know, we just put the Bucks in as one thing and we put him in, like, you know, we rank him as a tag team and we just move on from there. But I don't, man, there's so few wrestlers in the history of wrestling that have been involved in more great matches than Nick Jackson has. And Hechicero, just, they're unbelievable together.
Yeah, and like, you also think about, like, man, think about Nick Jackson like as a babyface versus Hechicero in Arena Mexico in a lightning match. Like, give it the time for it. That could be one of like the most brain melting things to happen in that building for a while, other than Sobrano trying to become king of Arena Mexico.
Yeah, I'm back. I want to have this conversation now, but then we'll get to the Twin Gate match, because I, you know, obviously, as an SFM 50 voter, I have some level of responsibility I don't have to watch everything. You know, we've all got blind spots. I apologize to the Joshi contingent at large. You're not going to see any Joshi names on my list. I haven't watched any this year, although I am, and I have said this all year, a Stardom business respecter. My hat's off to you guys. I think what you're doing is legitimately very impressive, and I'm all about it. I haven't watched the product. I'm not going to vote for any Joshi this year, but the rest of the Japanese promotions and CMLL and AEW and to some degree the US Indies, I have a responsibility to be an expert on. And I was woefully behind on Noah. I was woefully behind on All Japan. I'm still behind on New Japan. I'm trying to make a dent in that. But in the same way, you know, it's like we talk to people all the time who are like, yeah, Dragon Gate's fine. I just can't connect to any of the guys. This generation of New Japan wrestlers, I don't give a fuck about. I find it, that is the hardest promotion for me to watch. I have such a hard time with anything other than the highest of the high-end New Japan matches right now. But I bring all of this up to say that I crash-watched a lot of CMLL. Turns out, still phenomenal. I fell behind only due to I stopped being home on Fridays and Saturdays, and I fell behind on Arena Mexico in September and hadn't been able to catch up, and I ran through all the stuff I needed to. That promotion still kicks ass. Mike, did you know that in the year 2025, one of the, according to my list, 30 best wrestlers in the world is all caps Kenta?
I mean, you finally got him in the right place, and it's going to feel right that you have that opinion, you know?
I am in love with the work that he's done this year. I have watched now every major Kenta match this year, and then I enjoyed those so much, I was going back, and I was like, oh, well, that looks like a fun tag. Oh, he's with Odashima there. Like, oh, let me check that out. He's been incredible, because the thing with post-WWE Kenta is that I've always liked where his mind is at, where his mind is sharper than his body at this point. He got bogged down doing heel New Japan stuff, which is a fate worse than death. And you see it now with a guy like Sho, who's incredibly talented, but is just completely unwatchable. And Kenta, unfortunately, got lumped into that, which made me not enjoy him. But now that he's back just in Noah, we're recording this on the 20th anniversary of Kenta versus Loki from Ring of Honor. We're a long ways away from that. But in terms of great minds in wrestling, Kenta's just as sharp as anybody, man. He is so fucking good. And I can't believe I'm not hearing more about that, because the discrepancy between Kenta, Kano, Kiyomiya, occasionally Sagira, although I'm a little burnt out on Sagira, and then the Ozawa, Masa Kitamiya, Inamura stuff. The good and the bad in Noah could not be more extreme. I loved all the Kenta stuff that I watched. And then I tried to dip my toe back into the Ozawa stuff right before he got hurt, and now the Inamura stuff. And it sucks so bad. It is such a bummer that Noah's the way that they are, because I am into the stuff that's good so much. I had so much fun watching the good Noah stuff over the last week, and man, did I hate the bad stuff that I saw.
I just think Kenta kind of took stock of where he was for the last decade. It was like, all right, what can I do to maximize my earning while also taking it easy? Because I can kind of recognize this. I think Kenta is actually a lot smarter than people maybe realize. Because
I mean, as a businessman, he's become an incredibly savvy one. And yeah, as a wrestler, I think he has such a brilliant mind. I loved 2019 Kenta when he worked that G1. And again, mm-hmm. it wasn't 2009 Kenta, I'll tell you that much. But I was like, no, he's doing really good work. There's something really compelling about that G1 through the Naito match. And then the world ended after that. And then, you know, New Japan got really, really bad, even though they were already going off the rails, which nobody wants to talk about. But, it's what happened. That 7-month period or whatever, Kenta was incredible. And I seem to enjoy it more than most people. Maybe it was just that I had the expectation of prime Kenta is long gone. 205 Live Kenta was crazy underrated, but only me and Joe Lanza and Joe Gagne know about that. But there was that run there, that short babyface run in New Japan, where he was awesome, and he has rekindled that in Noah. And so if you haven't paid attention to the Kenta stuff this year, you got to go back and check some of that out. I have been blown away by how good he is. He deserves some love. Jackie Kame deserves some love. Rita deserves some love. Luis Monte deserves some love. And after this match, I'll even say D-Moose deserves some love.
D-Moose has made my Dragon Gate notebook case.
I know. Like, he made mine too.
I have to say that now the most dangerous move in Dragon Gate, the Cocolero shot, the way that he took it, I was like, oh, is D-Moose okay? And then it's like, oh, wait, this guy is built like a tank. It's okay. But I hammer this point all the time about Jackie Kamei, and this match was another prime example of it. I don't think that when I use this term, I'm using it in the pure physical like ability thing. There is no one who has a more command of their actual body and having the body control and the position and the balancing in pro wrestling as Jackie Kamei, as he does a turnbuckle super Frankensteiner going from a springboarding over to this into his insane T. Harris from the top rope onto Monte, who's standing on the apron, where Jackie basically lands on his feet on the apron. He slides down and he even looks more impressive that he does so. Jackie Kamei is a medical marvel that we really should be studying for science, because the things that this guy is able to perform in an acrobatic sense is something that I think it's profound, and it's also it's such an outlier to a lot of people in pro wrestling that I feel like it needs to be shouted from the mountaintops that like you don't have to go WWE athlete to have great athletic and acrobatic tendencies. You could just be a 5'2" guy who just is able to just go, oh, I can do this and I will do this. And I was just blown away with him down the stretch in this match. Just another example of Jackie Kamei perhaps being the best wrestler in the world today.
I wonder if, you know, one of the big talking points coming out of the D-Courage match in November where they won the belts was he hit a springboard Hurricane Rana that blew my mind, blew your mind. Our friend Alan talked about it a lot. It became sort of the signature spot of that really high level Twin Gate match. And I get the impression, based on what he did here, that that is something that was not just shared by the fans, but maybe something that was shared internally, because you had not only the crazy four-way spot where they were all on the middle or top rope, and Kamei leapt over Demus and Rita, who were in the same way that Dragon Kid does that assisted Ultra Hurricane Rana. They were in that position with Kamei on their left side on the top rope and Monte on their right side on the middle rope, and Kamei leapt past them to do a springboard Hurricane Rana onto Monte, which is a spot that I've never seen before. But then also at the very end of the match, Kamei did a springboard Rana where Monte was standing on the apron and Kamei was one corner over, so past the turnbuckle, and he did a springboard going over the corner of the ring, catching Monte perfectly, mind you, and then hitting a springboard Hurricane Rana to the floor. It seems like that has become a capital A, capital T, a thing, where now everybody is aware that no one is doing springboard Hurricane Ranas quite like Jackie Kamei.
Yeah, and it's just incredible stuff. I mean, and Rita, I feel like, definitely deserves to get credit as well. Like the work that he was able to do with Demus down the stretch, I thought was just really just strong stuff. But it's almost a shame that, like, I think Rita, and I know you do too, is one of the 20, if not higher,
got him in the top 20
wrestlers in the world right now. And he had such an incredible King of Gate and all of that. And then Jackie Kamei goes like, how about we go see some flips, guys? And at the end of the day, that's all I kind of think about in the Swing Gate matches, is how much Jackie Kamei just stuns me with his athleticism.
He's absolutely incredible. You know, this is a match that I went 4 stars on, very happy to go 4 stars on. The thing with Kamei that's always so interesting is just the intensity in which he's able to do some of those flip spots with. There is a level of aggression to it that I really do appreciate. And when he came in this match, you know, Rita and Demu started it. Kamei came out of nowhere with a springboard dropkick to enter the match, which I don't think anybody was expecting. But that opening sequence, when you look at what he and Monte did with one another, it goes back to the thing that I've complained about a lot lately. You know, this was crisp. This had impact to it. There was an aggression there that I really, really, really liked. And I find Kamei to be a flawless wrestler who can do everything that a high-level wrestler should be able to do. And this match was no different. Another 4-star match for Jackie and Kamei. Or, I'm sorry, for Jackie and Rita.
Yeah, I was 4.25. It was tremendous. It was my match of the night by far. Like
I've got one higher.
I'm excited to hear what it is when we get to it. D-Courage versus Cypatra. We did touch on this. Very giving match from Yoshioka and Dive, the way that they were absolutely kind of dominated with it. There was a cross-armed glory stretch that Cielo did to Daya that looked absolutely disgusting in this.
Yes, yeah, very much so.
The Triangle League has been a feature of Dragon Gate shows all month as we try to see who will be the 96th Open the Triangle Gate champion. As the tournament rolled into Korakuen, it was Natural Vibes, KZ, Strong Machine J, and UT who were at 3 points, going up against Love and Peace, who are at 2 points, Benkei Hyo, and Mochizuki Jr. And it was a 20-minute time limit draw that ended with KZ doing the spear counter with a running uppercut. And I felt like that this one was a little slow going to get started, but as it got into the closing stretch with the time call, and KZ and I thought Junior really became the kind of the star in the match in the last few minutes, it really turned into a really strong Triangle League match, at least for me.
I can't believe more people aren't talking about this match. I thought this was absolutely incredible. It was the type of thing that Dragon Gate does so well that, I love everybody in the Don Callis family. They're on the brain because, you know, I've got Dynamite on in the background. It's like, they can do so many great things. Don Callis family can have so many great matches. They are still unable to integrate the character of the group into those trios matches in the same way that more so Love and Peace than Vibes are able to. Like, there was something uniquely Love and Peace about this match that Natural Vibes had to combat. And I thought the chemistry between these two teams was utterly incredible. To go back to the SFM 50, you know, I'm not going to have KZ on my list this year because KZ didn't really do anything of importance. And then I watched KZ in this match and it's like, God, like, he's the best. No one is as sharp as this guy is in wrestling. He's absolutely incredible. I'm going to leave him off the list this year. I'm going to feel bad about it. But, you know, there was work from KZ that was great. There was work from Ben that was absolutely stellar. The fact that Hyo has been able to go up a level, and for Hyo in a match like this to be involved in the finishing stretch as much as he was, and to add to it, to be with a UT, to be with a KZ, these high-level guys that have that extra motor, and for Hyo now to be able to hang with them, whereas even 2 or 3 years ago, that really wasn't the case. That is so interesting to me. I thought this was the match of the night. I went 4.25 on this. The time limit draw caught me completely off guard. I did not think they would do that in this spot. This, to me, is everything that I love about this promotion. And I can't complain because Love and Peace didn't lose. But man, I just think there is so much juice in this unit with these three guys and with Jackie and with Rita. And I wish Dragon Gate would morph themselves into being the Love and Peace promotion rather than Love and Peace still really being fourth or fifth on the pecking order.
I mean, my wife, who is a known wrestling disinterest person, the wrestler that she still asks about from the Dragon Gate USA shows are Hyo. She goes like, oh, what's Hyo up to? I'm like, oh, Hyo's doing things. You know, he's not like in the big picture. It's like, why isn't he? Like, he was the most popular guy there. It's like, I know, babe. I know. Hyo deserves it. But at least with the draw, Love and Peace is still alive in the Triangle League case. And they have a match in Kyoto against D-Courage, who are... they're out of it, but they could technically... It matters if Love and Peace... beats, or if D-Courage beats Love and Peace, they go through, and if Love and Peace wins, they go through. But if there's a time limit draw, then Natural Vibes comes into play, so there's a chance that 2026 could be the Love and Peace year, at least starting off that way, if they string together two wins to close out the year in Kyoto and Kobe.
Now, God willing, I know. Yeah, I know they've got the Twin Gate titles right now. If I was booking, they would have the Triangle Gate belts as well, but that's an uphill battle. I have no feel on this Triangle Gate League.
It's been hard to have a feel.
Yeah, it hasn't struck a chord with me. I mean, the heel Sy Patcher team will go to the finals, but do you have any takes on just the larger Triangle Gate scene right now?
I mean, like, so Gacha Dokuro 3-1, they are already in the finals. Their only loss was to Natural Vibes and Hokkaido, and they're waiting for this. It does kind of feel like Gacha Dokuro, sure, yeah, give him the Triangle Gate a belt if you're taking it away from Sy Patra because of that injury and you're kind of resetting and then going again. But it does feel like that. Of the groups that are still alive, so Paradox is out. They finish on 3. There's no way they can get higher. I just kind of feel like that coming out of this, I really want to see like a reset maybe of some parts of the unit landscape. Like if D-Courage does not win and does not advance on to and win the Triangle Gate belts, then what's the purpose of these three guys still being in a unit at this point anyways? Like that's kind of my big Triangle Gate League thing of going, yeah, maybe this is time for Tanaka coming out of this to turn on these guys, and now it's just Daya and Yuki and they can go find another group at this point, because that's kind of my only Triangle League take, other than it'd be nice for Love and Peace to win it.
I'm more hung up on Vibes. Like you kind of stumbled into an opportunity where you could have them do something, and it just doesn't seem like they're going to.
And I don't think that this is the time to kind of talk about it. I do wonder with Vibes if the Shimizu Spectre, maybe things happen in January if things come to a head with that too. And that's another thing about this league, is it's like, oh yeah, Flamita's not here, and it's just the three guys that have been wrestling as Natural Vibes. The only part of Natural Vibes for the better part of what would it be? 2 months since Flamita left. But
yeah,
really, if you think about it, the whole calendar year. So
yeah,
it's a weird situation, but you're right. Like this is Natural Vibes. If you go, they're still alive in this. They could go on and be Triangle Gate champions and end out this year, while basically being a three-person unit with two inactive members and not really doing much of elevation for anyone who remains in it. It's a weird league for me.
It's a very weird league. I have no feel for it whatsoever.
Yeah, no. It's tough. I'm looking forward to the match in Kyoto and how it pans out, however, but I just don't have a feel, man. I feel like that the Sy Patra loss was, or that the issue with Sy Patra and Homari was very demoring for the division, because it felt like that this was like the way to kind of keep Shun occupied and have Sy Patra things happen without Shun being like fully in the picture.
Well, this is the strange thing about Dragon Gate booking in this era that I can never fully wrap my head around. And it's a promotion that's always been staunchly conservative. I always, you point out, it's like, you know, think about like Don Fuji and Genki Horiguchi have been on the roster for 26 years. They've maybe had 2 or 3 televised singles matches. That just feels like it's impossible. But they, you know, this is not a promotion that likes to burn matches unless they absolutely have to. And there's the Cielo Skywalker tag on this show where they dominate D-Courage. With the benefit of hindsight, it's like, okay, well, this is done to heat up Cielo and we'll see what they do in January. But it didn't make me want to see him challenge for the Dreamgate. It made me want to see those two guys challenge for the Twin Gate. And I'm confused by the idea, especially if Valletta's going to go home and if Homari is going to be hurt. How are the first 6 months of 2026 not going to be defined by Skywalker Cielo Twin Gate matches? And God forbid they run a rematch where you get Skywalker and Cielo versus Kame and Rita 2, God forbid 3, could you believe even 4? Like, that made me want to see those guys as Twin Gate champions, and that would give Shun something to do. And sometimes it just seems like they ignore the obvious, and it's so strange to me. I thought they were building them up for a Twin Gate match, and now I have this Dream Gate match I have no confidence in.
No, I hear you on that. It's very kind of, it makes me wonder what the real King of Gate plan originally was also.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I didn't really think about it like that, because the Valletta stuff made sense. Do you think they called it a big audible?
I don't know if it's a big audible, but I think maybe that when things when the Hamare injury and everyone was kind of beat down, it made a lot of sense maybe to go to a plan where even if he was Triangle Gate champion in a world where they didn't vacate, he could have won it and would have been fine. But I just kind of wonder, because there are certain things that have happened over the last few weeks that within the, as people who have covered this promotion for more than a decade case, it's a little unmooring. That's kind of the word I go back to.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Other Corkin thoughts before we close it out here. We've kind of talked about all of the big meaty stuff. There was Gacha Dokuro 10 man versus Paradox that I thought was okay. It was worked as a full on sprint, and Ishin won with a distraction cookie shot on Kagetora, and it just seemed like a fun way to get all 10 guys on the show that they had a lot of other stuff going on with. But in a way, also, you had all of Gacha Dokuro in one match. So throughout the rest of the show, there was not necessarily like that much of like face heel stuff going on too. And maybe that also contributed a little bit to that unmooring feeling.
Yeah, I thought that was too quick. I couldn't really sink my teeth into that. The thing that I found to be shockingly delightful on the undercard was the old man tag.
Oh, the four-way? Yeah.
Yeah, I, you know, that wasn't anything great, but I was really entertained by what they did.
Yeah, so it was, Jay was talking about how this would be like a We Are Dragon Gate match that features people who have essentially, with the exception really of Arkin and Awashi, have been day in, day out guys in the promotion for 26 years. You had the Bicycle Brothers reunion, Don Fuji and Ryo Saito, the original Torimon tag team, Susumu Yokosuka and Yuzushi Kanda. Really, Genki and Arakan, other than like original Sekigun days, they never really teamed up much in the Torimon days, but it was Genki Horiguchi and Kenichiro Arai making a Korakuen appearance for the company. And then Aganiso, Masaki Mochizuki, and Toru Awashi, and just a really fun, good time tag that I think one of the things about Audibles being declared during King of Gate, getting some focus back onto Genki, now has the crowd now really into whenever he has the backslide spots. Like, it was a smart thing to kind of recharge the backslide forever in that. Susumu Yokosuka, who is the first ever Ryukyu Dragon double champion in history, by the way, gets the win over Genki with the Yokosuka Cutter. I had a great time with this. This was just a good time, and then they cranked it up at the right time, and a lot of great stuff of Genki Horiguchi that I think was built off of him being in King of Gate and getting that miracle run.
I'm with you. You know, I have nothing else to add other than that. I really thought Horiguchi had completely become toast, and to see him have a fun little month long run here has been a really enjoyable thing. As somebody who considers him to be one of my favorite wrestlers of all time, this is all bonus extended Horiguchi time that I never thought we'd get.
Absolutely. So, the Aware Gate we touched on earlier, just to do the recap, Ultimo was DQ'd. So it was Jiro Shimbashi's first actual win in Dragon Gate as a pro wrestler. However, Ultimo's begging not to win the Aware Gate bit him in the ass. He becomes the new Aware Gate champion to immediately vacate. The show opener was Young Dragon Gate with Ryu Fuda and Kazuma Kimura versus Ryo Tanaka and Daiki Yanagiuchi. It was a Hiryu on Daiki from Fuda to win. And I thought that this was for like an opener on the card for this kind of show where it's kind of end of the year. I like the fact that they kind of let them go at it as an opener. And all in all, like when you look at this Corkin show, even though the Dreamgate situation and other things aren't necessarily as strong as they have been, I thought that this was a genuinely really enjoyable end of the year Corkin for the show, for the company.
Very much so. I'm with you. I enjoyed this show top to finish. I thought the undercard over delivered. I thought two of the three title matches, meaning the Aware Gate match and the Twin Gate match, were excellent. Vibes and love and peace continue to dominate, and the main event at the very least was a spectacle worth watching.
Now, I am with you on that. I will run through Saturday's show that is on the network before we get out of here. The main event was the Triangle Gate League match that we were talking about, Love and Peace versus D Courage. Winner advances on to Gacha Dokuro. Tie makes it a situation with natural vibes. Semi-main event, Jackie Rita versus Shun Skywalker in LCL. Okay, so you're getting it immediately in Kyoto. Your next one was Oldman versus Gaja Dokuro, Ultimo, Yamato, DK, and Susumu, Kakuta, Minora, Kai, and Kato, Jason Lee and Ishin versus Masaki Mochizuki and El Kakui, Naruki Doi versus Jiro Shinbashi, and we're opening with Natural Vibes versus Fuda, Daiki Yanagiuchi, and Akihiro Sahara making an appearance.
Nice to see Sahara again.
Yeah, I feel like it's been a while for him, but we're getting that semi-main event case. I'm just circling that, underlining it, and just preparing myself for. I know next week we're talking about those days, but that is, I'm making time this weekend, even though it's a big Saturday for me with the Miami Hurricanes. I'll make time to watch this on Saturday.
No, as you should. I think that's going to be a ton of fun.
Yeah. I don't know if I will be in any state of mind that after 11 a.m. Central Standard Time though, to watch wrestling. It's been a weird season for your local Miami Hurricanes booster. I'll say that. It's been a season.
I'm glad you're at least in the position you're in.
Yeah, we're playing at Texas A&M, and I had a 75-year-old man, I'm guessing, stop me in the shopping market, in the grocery market on Monday, where I was wearing a Canes hat, and he came over to me, poked me on the shoulder, and shook my hand and told me to beat the shit out of the Aggies. So college football, at least in Texas, is a different kind of thing. Well, buddy, was there anything else you wanted to touch on before we got out of here?
Real quick, I do just want to mention the interview I have with MVP that some people have watched today. It's funny, and I knew this was going to happen. I designed these interviews to be this way specifically, where I try to get something for the aggregator, you know, something that Fightful and the Observer, the F4W Twitter, and places like that, that they can latch onto, and then something for the Voices of Wrestling universe to latch onto. And I feel like if a good interview, I get one for each. And this had that, where the aggregators attached themselves to the quote, which I was sure to send out to people because I knew they would care about it, about MVP saying that he thinks Tony Khan is simply just a better human than Paul Levesque and a better boss and more fun to work with. And then the thing that the Voices of Wrestling universe is talking about today is the stuff with Dave Meltzer and MVP's vitriol towards him during that interview. But if you haven't seen it and you like, you know, the Tony Khan interviews that I've done, or the Rocky Romero interview, the Ricochet interview, whatever that may be, I've got one with MVP where we talk a lot about New Japan in the early part of the interview. Because I don't know why I know that MVP is such a big Masahiro Chono fan, but I knew that he was. And so I knew I wanted to lead with that. And we ended up talking. I thought we had a really interesting conversation about the early days of New Japan's expansion into America and the New Japan USA tour in 2011 with the Intercontinental title. That was on my list of things I want to talk about, and MVP led me right to that. And so it's a fun conversation. You know, I would never watch an MVP interview with any other outlet, but I think obviously if you like this show, I think it's worth your time, because I do think we hit on some stuff that is interesting that doesn't typically get asked.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, I thought that hit y'all's discussion about the precursor to New Japan World and kind of MVP's kind of position in that, and how it was towards that American expansion in 2011. I thought that for me was one of the little hidden delights hearing him talk about that. I really enjoyed the interview, bud.
Thank you. Yeah, so that's up there. You can find it on the Voices of Wrestling Discord. I know the Patreon posted it. It's Q101 interview with MVP. You can find it there. But I just want to plug that real quick.
Yeah, no, be sure to check that out. Those days, I think we could say expect it in your feeds before Christmas Eve. We have an early week recording time for that. I don't know when Five-Star Match Game's coming out.
That's a good point. We recorded a Five-Star Match Game, our annual year-end tradition with Joe Gagné and Alan Forel. We recorded that over the weekend. I do not know when that comes out, so I will reserve any comments until then.
Mm-hmm. Yep, nope, but check that. There's a lot of us that will be on this podcast feed for the next few days, is what we're essentially saying. But if you want to follow us elsewhere, you could find us on social media at Open Voice Gate. Case is @_inyourcase. I'm @FujiHeya. If you want to also join the discussion, step inside the Voices of Wrestling Discord. Okay, so the Dragon Gate channel was popping with the Corkin yesterday. And I know that that's always a big place for people to when they are live, if they're watching the streams live there, as well matches of the week there as well from Angry216, but also the Open the Voice Gate channel where we have match listings. Whenever we have episodes of those days, like next week, there will be our match listings for that there, as well as our pin posts with if you're doing a bunch of holiday travel over the next few days, or really just in general. Case has a great spreadsheet with all of our historical podcasts up there. It's upwards of 70 at this point. A lot of designed evergreen hours that you could fill your holiday drives or transits with if you're looking for that there as well. But you can find that all on the Voices of Wrestling Discord. But we will be back with you in a little bit with those days. Thanks for listening to Open the Voice Gate. Take care, everyone. Goodbye.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US Soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Hi, I'm Andrew Rich, and if you're like me, you look at the state of modern wrestling discourse and think, wow, what a cesspool. That's why I'm here to tell you about Music of the Mat Remix. That's right, your favorite wrestling music podcast is back with a new format, where I bring on a guest and we play songs related to wrestling-themed topics. It could be a wrestling reference, a wrestling concept, a wrestling pun, things of that nature. Now you might be saying, Andrew, that is a very, very tenuous connection to pro wrestling on a wrestling podcast network. Is this just an excuse to hang out with your friends and talk about music and ignore the rest of the wrestling landscape? Yes. Yes, it is. So listen to Music of the Mat Remix on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network, available on Apple, Spotify, or your podcast player of choice.
Do you like wrestling trivia? Then check out the 5-Star Match Game, the Pro Wrestling Quiz Show. I'm Joe Gagne, and every episode, I grill 3 contestants with 5 rounds of power-packed wrestling trivia. We have over 30 evergreen episodes in the archives covering WWE, AEW, Japan, Mexico, and much, 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 much more. Play along at home and check it out today.